Am I armed?
3, 2, 1. No, you don't say one.
Okay, go now.
Go now.
Okay. It is a good day, afternoon, or evening, at whatever time you might be listening to this. Welcome to the next episode of...
You Never Studied!
We are here. I am Hans. This is Evan.
Hey.
We are happy to be with you. For those of you listening, if you have not gone on your podcast app yet and given this a 5-star rating and a nice little friendly review, we would encourage you to do that. Share it with your friends. Whenever you share an episode, we gain... Listen.
An angel gets its wings.
And that happens as well. Also, remember, you can email us at youneverstudied@gmail.com. You can also put in information on our website, which is youneverstudied.com, and help us with some mailbag options because we're going to be recording some special episodes
in the coming weeks. Tell us if you want to know our favorite color.
Anything you want.
Yeah, whatever it is.
So we've gotten a couple of suggestions, but we need some more. So please shoot us an email, or if you have our number, shoot us a text.
That's fine, too.
And
Facebook,
you can just
whatever.
Let us
yeah.
know what you'd like to hear as we do some. We're going to record an extra episode even next week for the following week because
right.
I'll be out of town.
That's
so we need to know now. But it has been a busy week.
Yes.
We want to get right to it with our first
super excited about
segment.
Didn't you know? Okay, so here's the question, Hans.
Bring it on.
If the President of the United States walked into Genesis Church and you had 5 minutes notice,
ten minutes notice,
Matt's doing communion or whatever it is, and then you're like, I want to be prayed for, how do you respond?
I run away.
I'm the worship pastor, so like this.
You don't even
I'm just like,
whatever you think, guys.
Do you need
guys,
to play an extra song while you get collected?
Man, I honestly have no idea.
For those of y'all who don't know what we're talking about, this very thing happened to David Platt, who I would say is kind of in our orbit affinity of pastors that we listen to, pastors that we hold in he's a well-regarded pastor. He's very missional. He's written the book Radical. He was president of the
Radical Together.
Radical Together.
Follow me.
Yeah, Radical.
Ratty, rad, rad,
yeah,
rad.
Radical Cars. I don't know.
Radical.
Yeah. So, but he was president of the Southern Baptist IMB for
a term or two. Yeah, he was a professor in New Orleans, pastored in Birmingham.
And now he's
IMB.
Pastor. Yeah.
Then he tried to do an IMB McLean Bible Church. He tried to tag team it. And then that didn't work too well.
And he was just, I'm going
to
be the McLean.
They're like, yeah. So then IMB hired a new president executive director.
Yeah, executive director.
And he has been the teaching pastor. This was a succession.
Was it a multi-site church?
Yeah, Lon Solomon handed
his... Was this in your paper? Your
dissertation? It was a footnote in an appendix because it happened while I was writing it. So I just had to get on it. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So what happened?
Okay, so this was pretty interesting because social media started to play this this clip I saw on Twitter by TikTok, I think, is like the whatever. And it was David Platt praying over Donald Trump with no context, right? It was just him putting his hand on Trump's shoulder, clearly at a worship service, and he said a prayer, and it was a very Platt prayer. Like, if you don't know Platt, he's like Nation's Gospel Jesus. He has most of the book
of
Romans
memorized.
Yeah, I
would argue that he basically prayed for Donald Trump to believe the gospel as well.
And like, and so he does not buddy up to
not
religious folks. So, like, Jerry Falwell's giving him a hard time. He's saying, like, oh, yeah, David Platt needs to blah, blah, blah.
Franklin Graham had called for a national day of
prayer
for Trump.
And then Trump shows up. So we see this video, this clip kind of emerging on Sunday of David Platt.
I woke up from my Sunday siesta, my sacred siesta, to that thing.
My worlds are colliding.
I was like, what
is happening? Because this is not, if I said what would be something David Platt would be doing, praying for the president in
of America
is not something I thought he would be doing. And so then I'm of course a little bit of a church nerd, so I'm like, I wonder where this is gonna go.
Sure. Yeah.
And so I've been watching since it's gone on of like how big this has become.
Yeah,
so
I mean,
like,
the Atlantic picked up a story.
Politico grabbed it. So it's funny to listen to people who don't know who David Platt is try and write about it, because they're like, a pastor prayed blah 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 for him, and like, so it's interesting to watch people who really have no context for who he is or what he was praying to try and explain what was going on. Now the church, the McLean Bible Church, is a pretty it's a big church, and it has a lot of connection to the political world in there in McLean, Virginia. And so interesting, so then what happens, right, is on Monday, or maybe I think it was Monday
morning,
I knew this was going to happen.
Yeah, he sent an email.
So Platt put something on the website explaining, let me explain to you what happened.
Yeah.
Service ended. I was about to lead communion. I got to know if the president was going to be there. First Timothy came to mind. It is First Timothy, right?
Yeah, it's First Timothy.
Two. Yep. But yeah, praying for people in positions of authority. And so that came to mind. And so the president shows up. So he made a split second decision.
Right.
To pray for him.
I have a bit of that quote.
Yeah, go
ahead. From his thing. He says, I wanted to share all of this with you in part because I know that some within our church, for a variety of valid reasons, are hurt that I made this decision. This weighs heavy on my heart. I love each member of this church, and I only want to lead us with God's word in a way that transcends political party and position, heals the hurts of racial division and injustice, and honors every man and woman made in the image of God. So while I'm thankful that we have an opportunity to obey 1 Timothy 2 in a unique way today, I don't want to purposely ever do anything that undermines the unity we have in Christ.
Right.
So that was all him kind of talking, and this is his letter that he released. And so my question is, why did he feel the need to write that? If he felt like he was obeying 1 Timothy 2, why does he have to write that
This is pretty interesting because I'll say it from the Platt perspective, right? If you don't know, Platt is – he's like nations, 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 nations. And he even writes in that letter about how many countries are represented. And so he realizes,
Like over 100.
Especially when you have like – so many different cultures represented, so many people who probably feel demeaned or harmed or hurt by the president.
You're talking about this president's rhetoric being known to be divisive to certain types
and
of
so,
people.
And so, like, sure. And this awkward connection that Trump has the evangelical vote.
Correct.
And so, like, all – you just, like, you know, like, I don't want to be Robert Jeffress. I don't want to be Falwell. Like,
especially somebody like Platt
who
has a huge heart
himself
for the nations
and
is not a
Platt's
political –
like, unreached, unreached, unreached.
Yeah.
And so he was like, I heard the scriptures came to mind to do this. We had an opportunity to do it. I think Platt was even able to share the gospel with him backstage.
Yeah, that
he didn't say what he shared.
But that seems to be the tone and
tenor. And so – It went exactly like if you said, hey, Hans, pick somebody that you know in evangelical culture who could pray publicly for the president and millions of people could hear it, I'd be like, David Platt.
Yeah.
like he would be the guy I'd pick to have a prayer that is heard in a multiplying amount of ways around – speaking of multiply, that's a book he wrote for
Instagram. Oh, my goodness.
To multiply that prayer and the content of that prayer, which was all about Jesus and the work he's done, around the world was a pretty cool thing.
Sure.
But then, as you and I have talked about it, I'm like, this is lose-lose.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it just feels lose-lose. And some people are like, how in the world are you praying for the president? And it's because the desire that – well, one, by law, you can't endorse political candidates. And it was funny, like, Trump was campaigning on, we're going to remove that. Churches should be able to.
Yeah.
I'm like, no.
No.
Like,
we'll talk about that in our next segment.
Yeah. But it's interesting because you want your worship environment to be the place anybody feels comfortable.
Absolutely.
And
even in the quote that I read, he was like, I know
when
this
you
hurts in, some
when
of
you
me.
Invite that, and I could probably be any president, right? Like, but when you invite. No, I would say this. He wasn't invited. It was the president's coming.
Yeah, the president invited himself, and he is the president. So, like,
so
do you go,
say,
no, you can't come in here.
And then, like, I love what Ed Stetzer said. I'll find it here in a second because he had a pretty jokey, condescending tweet about it, which I thought was funny. But I'm like, lose-lose because you want to do what the scriptures call you to, but you also know you will be picked apart for this decision because – of just how polarizing it is. So this is what Ed Stetzer said about it. Ed Stetzer was with Lifeway. He's kind of
he's
a name in the SBC now.
Now right?
He's gone more ecumenical. Like his reach has grown. And so this is what he said, which I loved. I know that every person tweeting criticism of David Platt would have handled it so much better if the president showed up at your place with little notice, but maybe just consider that he's not as smart, godly, or prophetic as you are and try to extend grace to your lesser brother.
Yeah. Like, I saw that. And I have... I like parts of what Ed Stetzer has done, particularly when he was with Lifeway Research and was giving us really helpful statistics. I don't see eye to eye with him on a lot of things, but that kind of attitude that he has, he's like, hey, maybe you are just playing Monday morning quarterback and you should just, you know, stop.
So the way I thought about it is like, I couldn't play the what would I have done. I think Platt did exactly, you give him 100 opportunities, he's going to do that. He's going to do what he did.
With the time that he had.
Right, right.
I think if he had longer time, he might have tried to do something different.
If you had that, but then, like, if you read one Twitter follower had a whole thread about
I pulled that up.
Kyle Howard's?
Yes.
Where he was just like, I couldn't do it. I'd have to leave. Yeah. Like, there's other things you could say. We're not going to have you on the stage. You can come to our worship service anytime, but we're not going to have you. Like, that is one thing that people could say. So I just thought.
Yeah, he says, since y'all keep asking, Pastor, this is the pastor talking, he says, Mr. President, thank you so much for coming. You are welcome to attend our service. Trump, I want to be on stage for a moment. Pastor, Mr. President, with respect, your words have wounded many of my flock, or many of my sheep, sorry. It would not serve them to have you on stage, especially without any time given to them to prepare. You are welcome here. We're so thankful you came, but you cannot. But I cannot have you on stage. I'd love to pray for you privately with my other elders in the back.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, that seems like you could have said that.
You could have said that with time to think about it. Right? That's the thing.
And yeah.
If you could go, now you can always go, how would we handle this if somebody showed up? But like, we had, this is on a totally different scale. We had at the chapel one time, the current mayor, Sharon Weston Broom.
Probably one up that before you came, we had the governor.
Yeah, so we've, yeah. So
Chapel was in the capital city. Yeah, it was in Baton Rouge. It was well connected politically. It was much more so on the local government, side of things.
Yeah, local state government, like that, that. And so she was at the service one time. I was like, and I was unaware of who was
LSU,
there.
Former LSU coach,
and
Les
she,
Miles.
She talked to me afterwards, and she would just say, like, we're just looking at churches in town. We're trying to learn about them.
Sure.
But there was no, can we share? What about this? Hey, just so you know, so and so is going to be here. None of that happened.
Yeah.
And that's the thing I think you want. There's always this piece of me, and I'm speaking a little bit where I just go, you're trying to suck another evangelical into the Trump world, right? I mean,
I think people are like, Platt got used, that's what everybody's, saying. And
he would be saying, my use for God's glory, right? Like, he would be
Platt would be like, hopefully God used me. Not just Donald Trump. Hopefully God used me
in Donald Trump's life
and in the life of our nation to hear the gospel clearly presented. I hope a lot of people that aren't believers listen to me pray this prayer. I think he can stand by every word he prayed.
I think that too. I was talking to Kevin Bowles, show sponsor Kevin Bowles, about this.
Friend
today.
Of the show.
Yeah, your brother-in-law, my cousin-in-law.
DreamingAboutTheMouseTravel.com. That's my sister's thing, but he doesn't have a separate side hustle. So.
But we're so grateful for them sponsoring this episode. But he was like, I think he can wish it wouldn't have happened and still had done nothing different, right? We're like that.
And I talked about that too. Like, I think we both have had that conversation.
Or Stuart's comment, glad that didn't happen to me.
Yeah, Stuart just was straight up like, glad that didn't happen to me.
Because you don't know what you would do. And then, I had a conversation at the chapel one time with Paul. Paul was an elder in Kenya who was I think he was getting a PhD in chemistry. And he talked one time about being at a service and how difficult it was when a nationalistic statement was made.
Yeah.
Because he was like, in Kenya, we do not recognize political figures within the service. When you're here, you are somebody following Jesus.
Right.
And any identity you have outside of this room no longer exists.
Exactly.
And that was it was very, for a Kenyan believer in America, hearing political statements made at the church was incredibly dissonant for him.
Yes. And do you remember John Piper telling his story about the American flags that used to flank they had a Christian flag and an American flag on the stage that used to like flank the whole stage at Bethlehem Baptist Church. And I mean, as soon as he got there, he was like, I want to take those down. And I want to put up flags of like all the nations, where America is just one of them. And I mean, like, they lost so many people over when they finally decided to do that as elders, once they finally got – and all they did was move – first, they just moved them out of the stage and said, I'm going to put them outside the doors so that they know, this is
– when you come in.
When you come in here, this is the embassy to heaven.
Yeah.
Like we're not – we're leaving our American identity at the door and we're becoming, people of the new heaven and the new earth.
Yeah.
And even then they were like, I don't understand how, it's just sure. So baked into the previous generation's understanding of church.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff just existed. In the next segment, we can talk about that more, but Mark Dever had a similar problem where they moved to an elder-led church. Mark Dever's a Capitol Hill Baptist church. So he's in DC. Yeah. DC.
Just a couple of blocks from Capitol Hill.
Yeah. Like, they removed the flag, same sort of thing. all of the elders were eventually in favor of it. Several of them were World War II veterans.
Yeah.
You know, and people got up and read poems that they wrote in the congregational meeting about the flag when they were in grade school. And the elders were, like, weeping when they did it. But they were like, we have to care about the Great Commission more than we care about this.
Well, it's interesting because I heard, I won't name the seminary or the president, but a prominent seminary with a prominent president, they were doing a master plan. And an underling thought, how great would it be as we do this development plan of the seminary to have an American flag at this beautiful spot on the grounds. And this prominent seminary president said, no way. You know, he's like, and the guy telling the story was like, I thought he was going to love it. I thought it was, you know, it was going to be this great opportunity to have the flag out. Mm-hmm. It's going to look so nice. And he was like, we cannot identify with a nation while we train people to be Great Commission Christians.
Yeah.
Like we can't do it. And so that shows just that tension, right? That tension it is. That you it's always
a,
feel.
It's a fine line. It really is. I mean, we got 4th of July coming up in like a month for our churches. Like, I assume that Genesis is probably just going to include that in their prayer time. Prayer for the nation, something like that.
Sure, yeah. Totes.
Like, that's, you know, but
I haven't been here for a year yet, so I don't know what we do and don't do.
I've worked at previous churches, you and I both have, where that's been an issue. Like, how much do we celebrate the nation's, you know, independence from another nation.
Yeah.
And it's like, wait, why are we doing that at all?
Yeah.
You know, once you start to think about it through that lens. But again, the previous generation, that's not, you know, that's not even something that computes.
Yeah.
And so for somebody like Platt is not looking through that lens, still makes the call to pray for Trump, and he does it based on scripture.
Right.
And nothing else.
Sure.
He certainly did not want to do it. I mean,
yeah,
I, you know,
you can see him in it where he's like,
you can
so.
Just look at that. And Trump just like totally does it. You just we're both closing our eyes and nodding and making Trump faces.
Yeah.
You know, he's just doing that with his arms folded and looks like he has hat hair because he came from the golf course.
Right.
You know, and it's just like, this is the weirdest thing I've ever seen. And that's where people are like, he just got played. You know, Trump gets this and he just looks good. And then David Platt's going to get hit both ways from this.
Like, and unfortunately, he is.
Yes.
It is an interesting prayer. Or not interesting. It's a great prayer. It's a beautiful prayer.
Dude, even the guy, that Kyle Howard guy, says, what did he say?
As he saw Platt's comments.
Let me say it again just to be abundantly clear. It was a great prayer, and I understand the church culture dynamic that says if a president shows up, we should pray for him in the church. I get it. I'm not mad at Platt. I love him. That culture just isn't for me or my family, which is the same thing you're kind of talking about with the Kenyans. And just like,
yeah,
that's like just a cognitive dissonance for me. Like, that wouldn't ever rise to the top for me, even for the leader of the free world.
Yeah.
Like, there's just nobody.
Yeah.
But then I think about, Stuart and I talked about this briefly. I thought about Paul's interaction. Now, granted, this is not a church service, but Paul's interactions like with Felix and Festus and how proper and polite and my most excellent so-and-so. Yeah. And it does make you go, if that guy had showed up and asked for prayer, like what would our church fathers have done for, you know, like, you know, people in the Roman government when the Roman government was known to be persecuting Christians? We're talking about this just based on like Trump makes people feel bad.
Yeah.
And I mean, I some would argue Trump's done more than just make people feel bad. And that's not a thread that we can pull in this podcast, but I understand that sentiment too.
Yeah.
But the outright persecution of Christians is when all of this stuff is being written to pray for your leaders, to look for social good, all that kind of stuff so that you can be peaceful. You know, that sort of stuff was being written amidst persecution.
Yeah.
So.
Now, there was also, though, this helps because you a couple of months ago you finished up a book, but it's now all coming right back to you going, oh, yeah, so much of this applies. And so I think it does make a lot of sense to then go to the next segment, which ties right in to what we've been talking about. So let's go there.
Hit the books.
Okay, Evan, you just reviewed?
Yeah,
you finished up a book, but it's written by an elder who was at Capitol Hill.
Yes.
And has now been sent out. But correct. Tell us a little bit about the book you just this ties in so well.
This book is called How the Nations Rage, and it's by a guy named Jonathan Lehman.
Yohanan.
Yeah, Yohanan Lehman. And he, like you said, he was an elder at Capitol Hill. And also is just...
Is he still the president of Nine Marks, the executive director?
Yeah, he's the whatever that is, head of Nine Marks, and writes for other people.
Everything.
Gospel Coalition. Sure. I think he's a fellow of the ERLC.
And super smart.
I don't know that I will ever read another political Christian book that's not by him. I probably will. But it's just... it floored me how I was like, oh my gosh, I have to highlight yeah. everything in this book.
Yeah, I was seeing that. No, yeah. give us a couple of thoughts that okay. you have about the
so,
book.
So the whole thing, this book does not have an introduction, by the way. So
it just gets right to it.
And he's like, here's where we're going. He doesn't do that. He builds kind of this cumulative case about rethinking church and government from the ground up. He calls it like a zero-based budget approach. Like,
yeah.
We have to start over. Untangle them for a second and then see how they fit back together just through the right lenses, through the right ways.
How do they fit?
Well, and he talks about you need to read the book. I would commend any American Christian should read this book. I really do prize the stuff in here that
mic drop.
And I know not everybody loves Nine Marks. That's weird to me, but I understand that.
You know why?
He's still...
They hate multi-site.
See, he does. You don't like him for that reason. I met Jonathan Lehman at Together for the Gospel briefly at the Nine Marks booth. He was super down to earth. Talked to me and Stuart for, you know, a good 3 or 4 minutes.
Yeah.
Just cool dude. And had great practical advice, you know, mostly to Stuart. I was listening. I was like,
I'm just a worship guy. Yeah.
I know you guys don't even have worship guys. You just pick the songs and make them sing.
Mark Dever picks all your hymns a year out.
Anyway, so, but a couple things really, really stood out to me. And the first was he brings out this point very early on that separation of church and state, which is a defined kind of American ideal, is different than separating religion from politics.
Explain.
So he says, we are all religious, everybody, whether you think you are or not, you are religious.
Okay.
The Bible tells us that. You are either idolatrous or you are worshiping the true God, but you are religious. You're worshiping something. And he goes, and what you worship affects how you think.
Sure.
And so he goes, so they have a set of values that is informing their beliefs. And so really it's which God is informing your politics. And that was such a great thesis that I was like, oh.
Yeah.
I have to reframe everything now. So I've got a couple pages marked. Oh, good one. And then he says, yet the conversation about separation of church and state applies differently to a Christian and a non-Christian. He says the non-Christian, after all, doesn't have a church. When the non-Christian affirms his belief in the separation of church and state, he means separation of government from the believer's church.
Yeah.
And he effectively says, yes, you can't impose any of your beliefs and morals on me because they come from your church. Okay, but does that mean he cannot impose his idolatrous beliefs on me as a non-Christian?
Okay.
And he was like, there's the catch. He has no official church and no God to name. And there's no such thing as the separation of idolatry and state.
Yeah.
Too bad for me, lucky for him. You see what I mean when I say it applies uniquely to the Christian.
Yeah.
And I was just like, man, that is so true. And I think it gets at the heart of why a lot of people are like, no, you don't get it, secular person. Like, your beliefs are just as informed by whatever you value as mine are. I just value God.
Yeah.
And his Bible. And you just value your freedom or money or, you know, whatever it is, social justice, whatever those things are. Some of them could be good things even. But he's like, yeah, that's your God. Like he's bringing it to a spirit. And he was like, and so we can't separate our gods from our politics. We can separate
the institution
to where my taxes don't pay for you can go worship down the street and baptize babies as long as my taxes don't pay for it. That's what separation of church and state is. And we can't institute a state religion. And so that was really great. And then he talked about just moral and religious foundations being essential to democratic government. That was really helpful.
Yeah.
He talked about the founding fathers. He talked about George Washington in his farewell address says true religion and good morals are the only solid foundation of public liberty and happiness. And then John Adams, second president, so literally the first two dudes ruling the country.
Yeah.
He says, our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other.
Twilight Zone right there.
And it's just like, oh, man. So, right. Like, the guys that wrote it are like, yeah, it doesn't work if you're just a godless people. And it's like, oh, man. And so
it does.
These are all early quotes, but he brings it back around, like, at the end, that same point. And he says, once Americans might have lived their lives with a broader array of moral institutions, such as belief in honor, loyalty, respect for authority, and the sacred, slowly, bit by bit, though, from one generation to the next, those older institutions, the basic moral categories, which used to need no argument, are fading away, basically just to personal freedom, not harming others, and proportional fairness.
Yeah.
And, like, that's what's left. And it's like, that doesn't work.
Okay, so just for the person who hasn't read him or is unfamiliar with it, explain to me and us why this isn't a get-off-my-lawn book. right? Like, we need to go back to the 50s.
Well, A, he's young.
Okay.
So he's not thinking about, like, times gone by. He talks about that in the book, too.
Yeah.
And he talks about, he's looking at this through the lens, the government can either be a help or a hindrance to the gospel.
Okay.
Like, that's how he's trying to talk about this. And he's going, if we think too little about it, and we withdraw from it, which some people are advocating to do now, and I think a lot of younger guys are kind of like, yeah, it's just hard and dicey, and I'd rather not talk about it.
Right.
And we have enough freedom that I don't have to.
Which is Rod Dreher's point.
Yeah, that's Rod Dreher's point. But that only works while we have freedom to withdraw. Mm-hmm. You know, like that only works because right now things aren't bad enough to where it forces us to confront the government slowly clamping down on that, which could happen.
Sure.
And he was like, and we have the form of government that as Christians we can speak into, and therefore we should.
Okay.
And I thought that was good. And the only critique that I had was just like, it's very centered around America. He's an American.
Of course.
He's writing on that. That's the premise of his book. So he doesn't talk about the nations very much. It's called How the Nations
How
Rage.
The Nations
But he
rage.
Brings that up and says, we're one of the raging nations, so let's not give ourselves too much credit.
Ah.
We rage against the King of Kings just like everybody else does. And so, he's basically pointing out, and he goes, that doesn't mean that we're in decline forever and that you can't right the ship or move it back towards godliness in some way, but you have to recognize that this nation is becoming increasingly secular and it's raging against the king and his anointed.
Yeah, so a big thesis is everyone's religious.
Yes.
And you can't really have the American experiment without shared morality.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
Like shared values around morals that are absolutes.
That are absolutes, yes.
Okay.
And then he does say you can love your nation. That comes back to the tension that we live in with Donald Trump and stuff like that. And he's like, you can love it, but not to the exclusion of other nations. And he goes, like, how did he bring it up? He says, we love our churches. Like, I love my church more than I love your church.
Yeah.
Because
I'm at my church.
Yeah, I go to it. And he's like, that's okay. You can love your church more than you love other churches, as long as it's not to their exclusion.
Right.
You know, it's not that we're better than, it's that this is the one I belong to.
Yeah.
I know everybody's names in it. We have a similar culture, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And it's all helpful. He has great analogies like that throughout the book.
So helpful in today's climate to give a read.
Absolutely.
That is awesome.
And he wrote it after Trump was elected, so it even touches on that some.
Okay.
And so that's helpful.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much, man. And now, though, I think
we need to talk about a fictional nation.
That's right. Let's get out of here and let's fly away to a new spot in our next segment.
Study break.
Evan, you just checked out.
Went to the nation of Agrabah.
Okay.
Yes.
Yes. And where do we find that?
On a map.
Yeah.
That's actually a subplot in the book when they ask him where, or in the movie where they ask where Prince Ali is from. They're like, well, can you show us Ababwa?
Yeah.
And they change a lot of stuff because it's, you know, a longer form.
Yeah.
Movie.
So now that we are, you know,
it's just fun.
Once you know you can make money off of something, you just keep remaking
Disney,
it.
Disney, man.
Yeah.
They're smart.
And
they make the money.
They're making new things. Lion King, all the childhood
cartoons.
Lion King
and Aladdin are coming out the same summer. They're just
Toy Story 4.
Yeah.
Lion King, Aladdin. So now we're just recycling.
They already made $3 billion for Avengers.
So you saw Aladdin.
I did. I saw it with my kids and my wife and a family friend that was in town. And so it was a lot of fun. And we didn't go in with super high expectations, and I cried 3 times. Nostalgia is a heck of a drug,
man.
That's
right.
You know, like it,
and they know it, too.
I know, they do.
Here's my $30.
I was like, I'm watching this with my kids, and I was this age when
I
watched it.
That's
you know, so they just got me.
They know what
they're
doing.
It was like a whole new world. Prince Ali, like all the big like show-stopping numbers, I was just like, this is really good. Just like drying my eyes.
Okay, I have a question.
Yeah.
I don't even really – the movie I'll maybe one day see.
Yeah.
Did you miss Robin Williams?
Of course, but they
How did
a,
Will Smith do?
Well, so Will Smith does not try and like tread the same ground. They make him more like Hitch as a genie, which totally works great.
And especially if you don't know how great Robin Williams was.
Yeah, that's the other thing. My kids have seen it, but like all the pop cultural references that Robin Williams made and stuff, like for the parents of that era, like those are actually going to get stale. Like we're not going to understand those. Whereas this is a little bit more of a timeless approach to the genie. I say timeless. I mean, it's obviously got like 21st century, like, you know, swagger, Will Smith swagger. But that, again, it's not like so like pop 90s pop culture referential. Like he's not pretending to be Rodney Dangerfield or Jack Nicholson.
Okay.
Or those sorts of things. Like he's just being Will Smith being like, dude, you gotta, you
know,
like,
right.
like,
it is
like
it.
Yeah,
totally
it, you know, it's like, you gotta tell her the truth. Like it's same sort of stuff.
Yeah.
It's just flipped around. And they, you know, spoiler alert, they changed some stuff. One of the biggest things is Jasmine gets a lot more to do. Which, again, it's 2019. Like, that just makes sense. They're going to give the princess more to do than just be the princess. A lot of people, like, even in some of the reviews, are like, this is secretly Jasmine. They just didn't call it that. They wanted to call it Aladdin. But I'd say she has equal screen time to Aladdin. And has
her way more.
Yeah, well, she has much more of an arc. I would say it really was Aladdin's movie in the Disney one. It was one of the few princess era movies that had a male protagonist.
Yeah,
and that the princess was just the princess.
Okay,
and this is sort of flipped back towards it being just as much her movie. But the special effects are not as bad as people made out to be. Will Smith as Genie is fine. I didn't have a problem with it. It's weird when he's blue, but he's also not blue for a lot of it. He turns human looking and like has a top knot and just walks around like a dude. Like a sort of pseudo Persian Arab. And that's kind of the other thing. Like it's not historically anything. Like it exists in this magical sort of Arabian Nights sort of Bollywood-esque. They even have like some Bollywood dancing in it that they add. And at the end they do like, you remember how Hitch had it dancing at the end? Like, I don't know if you remember the closing credits.
I watched Hitch in the past couple of months.
Yeah, yeah. And they have like closing credits where everybody dances. They do a similar Bollywood-esque type ending where everybody in Aladdin just
wedding.
Dances.
Yeah,
and they all kind of like shoot to different things. And some of them are obviously professional dancers. And then some of them are just like, Will Smith's like, I don't really dance that much, but you know, here's me doing it. And so like I said, it's just a lot of fun. There's a new show-stopping sort of Let It Go-esque Jasmine song that they added. They add some stuff. They spread out the story more. They make Jafar a little bit more. There was like hashtag hot Jafar. He's just a little bit more conniving and less like just I'm the bad guy kind of thing. So like I would actually say it's a fitting update for today. It's definitely something you could take your kids to. My kid loved it. Magic carpet rides. You know,
if the Sultan showed up to McLean Bible Church, would David Platt pray for him though?
Probably because he's from another nation would have much less problem.
We'd need to do that. It's good to know.
Yeah. So, but anyway, I highly recommend Aladdin and definitely pray for Agrabah and
Ababwa. That's right. That's good, man. We'll do that. I'm glad that you saw it. I'm glad that you cried. So, tearjerker. So, as a reminder, check out the David Platt prayer.
Yes.
Read the book.
Yeah, should definitely link to that.
Yeah, you'll see that in the show notes. And again, share this episode with your friends. Jonathan Lehman, if you're listening, I know you don't.
He's totally listening to this. He definitely listens to podcasts of this caliber.
You're our, I actually agree with you on multi-site way more than I disagree. But I had to disagree to write a dissertation.
Yeah, now you got the PhD, so you're true.
Yeah, I'm done. See you later. This is us signing off.